Kindred, and we talked about that last week and what he was doing in terms of going. And I hope you, if you don't know it, then just get the CD or get online and listen to it. Anyway, that's where he was, and he left, and I'm going to just read that group of verses first. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And I talked about what is it that people have to leave in terms of things when God puts a call in their lives. And then verse 2, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. In other words, that's the promise that he gives back to him. Verse 3, I will bless those who bless you, and with him who curses you, I will curse. And by you, all the families of the earth shall bless themselves. So Abram went as the Lord had told him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son, and all their possessions which they had gathered, and the persons that they had gotten in Haran, and they set forth to go to the land of Canaan. When they had come to the land of Canaan, Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. Now, just we covered those verses in a lot of ways in terms of how we move out of places where we are when God moves on our lives to do things, and we talked about that. The one thing I didn't cover last week, if you came to church on Sunday, you probably heard it anyway, but it is spiritual coverings. And I want to quickly cover spiritual coverings. If you look at chapter 11, verse 31 and 32, it tells you something. We just read this stuff and we don't think about it. Terah took Abram his son and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son, Abram's wife, and they went forth together from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan. But when they came to Haran, they settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Then he talks about Abraham, and he leaves, and he takes Sarai's wife, and he takes Lot with him. So we know that that kind of stuff is, what he's doing is they're taking people with him. The principle of the covering is really what I want you to kind of think about. If you are responsible for other people, if you're a father or a mother, if you are a boss in a business, if you're like pastor of a church, if you're one of the leaders in the church, the elders or deacons within the context of our church, we are coverings. I'm a covering for this church, and that church is not the building. It's you guys. I'm a spiritual covering. One of the things that I know, if I do not grow in the faith, chances are you're going to settle down in terms of your faith because you're not going to be hearing it in terms of on the growth edge in terms of faith because, well, I'm not preaching that. I'm not teaching that. If you're a father or a mother, wherever you go in terms of your life, now that may be physically, but also mentally, spiritually, emotionally, you're going to take people with you wherever you go. Have you ever heard the term, like father, like son? Well, guess what? The son has lived with that father or been influenced by that father as a covering and ends up being very similar to what his father is. You know, everybody's responsible for themselves, and I believe that. Yes, that's true, but I also know it's not necessarily true. Because a lot of times you're responsible for others who are under you in terms of authority or as a covering. So it's good to understand that. Some of you are under the covering of other people. You know, if you're working for ADM or you're working for Caterpillar or something and you're a worker in that group somewhere, you know what? You're under the covering of those people who are above you. And where the company goes, so go the people. It's just a principle. And in this particular story, that's what's happening with Abraham. It says that when he came out of there, he brought all these people with him. You could call that a family, but you could also call that a business if you wanted to. And he took them with him, and he moves on. And he moves on in faith. And it says in verse 6 and 7, and that's enough on covering. Yeah, everybody understand it? You understand it? Can you see where you play that in different settings? Okay, if you are a leader in the context of your family or your business or wherever, take it to consideration. If you don't go, they don't. So he gets them out of Haran, and he leads them out of Haran, and they move on faith. And we talked about all that last week. And in verse 6 and 7, he builds an altar there. And when he builds an altar, that's a place where we talked a little bit about that last week. An altar is just dedicating a place to God. You know, when I came here from Kentucky, I basically dedicated this church, and this church is not the building, because we were over at Woodland Chapel. Now we're over here. But I dedicated the church that I was going to be pastoring to God. I says, this is going to be the place where God is made to be known. And I built it in terms of that. And that was an altar, you might say. We have that stone outside, which could be a monument, you might say, but it basically makes a statement. That's kind of like our altar, where it says the verse in 24th chapter of Joshua, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. You can do what you want, but that's what we're going to do here. And so that's where he came into there, verse 6 and 7. Abram passed through the land to the place at Shechem, to the oak of Moreh, and at that time the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram. Now, this is one of the appearances to God. We don't know exactly how that looks, but I would say this is some kind of physical appearance that he made. And he said, to your descendants, I will give this land. This is a promise. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And that's what takes place in terms of that. What I want to talk to you today about is beyond the altar builder. So let me read on to verse 9. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. Thence, after that, I guess, he removed to the mountain on the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. He moved again. And he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. In other words, he dedicated that spot. This is going to be God's spot, and I'm his man in the midst of this. Verse 9, and Abram journeyed on, still going toward the Negev. Now, he obviously wasn't listening to God, I think. He says, I'm going to give you this land right here. And then he keeps moving. Don't you think that's interesting? That he keeps moving. So let me read the rest of this from chapter 12, verse 10, down to the end of the chapter. Anyway, now there was a famine in the land. Take note of these things. These are physical pictures, by the way. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there. And I'll just tell you right now that whenever you read about Egypt in the Bible, it is a picture of the world. For the famine was severe in the land. When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, I know that you are a woman beautiful to behold. This is his Valentine's statement. It's qualified, though. And when the Egyptians see you, they will say, this is his wife. Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say you are my sister, that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared on your account. When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful, And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, he asses, men servants, maid servants, she asses, and camels. But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and be gone." And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him on his way with his wife and all that they had. So Abram went from Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot went with him. Once again, notice there's people going with Abraham. He's the spiritual covering, but he's also their leader. Now Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver and in gold, and he journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been at the beginning. In other words, he went back to the place where he was, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now, here's what I want you to notice. He's going along in God's will. Got it? He's listened to God. He says, go to the land of Canaan and all that. And God manifests himself to him in some form or fashion. He appears to Abraham. And everything's going good. And suddenly something happens. And it's confusing, frustrating, uncertain. This is what you see happening to Abraham at this time. You know, he kept moving. And I don't know why he kept moving, because God told him, this is the place, man. Why don't you settle down here? Because I'm going to give it to you. And he just kept going like he wasn't paying any attention. I believe that God has a plan for your life and for my life. That there is a pathway that we are to journey on in terms of how we live our lives. And he's got things for us. And we have opportunity to discern God's will. And once again, Abraham is a man without the Bible. Bible hadn't even happened yet. And we go on, but you may have discerned God's will for your life, and you may have moved into that. But why do we not keep moving? Why do we blunder on in things in life? Have you ever asked that question? So why am I being so stupid? Here's some reasons. You're either young and you haven't figured this stuff out yet. Oh, I know, being 16 beats the experience any day. But I know when we're young and we're in I heard somebody describe our life as the womb, boom, tomb theory of life. And when you're in that boom area of your life, in the middle someplace, one of the things is we're young. We may have heard God, but we go on, and we're not sinful, we're not in rebellion necessarily, but we just go on and do whatever. That's one reason. Second reason is we're just not listening. God may be talking to us, but we're not listening. Or the third thing is, and this is the main one, we hear what we want to hear. We have such a tendency to reinterpret God's will for our lives. We hear what we want to hear. We may have heard God speak to us, but then again, we put our own twist on it, our own spin on it, and that was it. Now, here's a principle, and I don't know if you're smart enough to take it to heart, but this is a true principle. You can learn from others' mistakes. You can learn from other people's mistakes. You know, if they're doing something stupid and it gets them into all kinds of stuff, he says, I don't think I'll do that. You can learn from other people's mistakes, and that can be biblical or otherwise. Like, we're going to be looking at Abraham, and this is a mistake. He's doing something that is really weird, actually, because God told him. He says, this is the place, park here. And then he kept moving. Let me read this. Verse 1. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. That's God talking to Abraham. Verse 7. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. So he built an altar there. God is telling him where he should be going and where he should be parking. There's no confusion in that, is there? I'll show you where you're supposed to go. And when he gets there, he says, this is it. Park it. But no, he even built an altar there. We know that. In verse 7, or verse 8, then he removed to the mountain out in the east of Bethel and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord, called on the name of the Lord. In other words, he was in that same area, okay? The question is, if God tells you something and you get to that place where he's told you to be, why move from there? Why go do something else? Why did he move? Well, if I was interviewing Abraham, kind of like those guys interviewing me, I said, hey, Abraham, why did you go on down to Egypt? He says, well, there's a famine in the land, and it seemed like the thing to do. I mean, it's kind of like the guy that jumped into the cactus nude. Somebody asked him why he did it. He said, it seemed like a good idea at the time. And he goes, on down there. Well, isn't that the place God showed you? Yes, that's the place. Now, I want you to catch a couple things here. A lot of times these names mean things here. He parks between Bethel and Ai for a short period of time. That is actually where he comes back to. Now, Bethel means house or place of God. That's what it means. Ai means ruins. Or the root word is actually iniquity. And so he has parked himself where God has showed him to be, but he is between two places. He's between a place where God is named as, that's his place, and ruins or iniquity or sin, if you want to call it that. So he's parked between a rock and a hard place, you might say. He's between ruin and the house of God. By the way, this is where we live most of our lives. Between that, those two things. Between the house of God, which is God's presence, which is looking towards God's with our life, and the other one is ruin. Has to do with iniquity and sin, where we actually get involved in destroying ourselves, and he is parked right between the two of them. Now, in chapter 13, verse 4, it says, He journeyed on from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place where he had made an altar at the first. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. In other words, that's where he lived. Now, we actually seem to have the propensity to do the same kind of thing is to park between God's presence in our life and listening to God and then ruining our lives by doing it our own way, and maybe sin enters into it as well. And that's where we park ourselves. So what had happened here is that he came out and he settled in the land of Canaan, and Then he decided to go on down to Egypt because there was a famine in the land. And you'll notice that in Egypt, he does not make an altar to God. Egypt is always a picture of the world. So in other words, basically what he's doing, road trip. No indication that anything in Egypt is God's will or purpose. As you read this, there is no indication that any of that has to do with God's will or purpose. And he doesn't hear the voice of God. So in some ways, what he did was he just kept going. And he missed the mark. By the way, that's one of the definitions for sin. He missed the mark. He just kept going. He didn't figure out, well, this is where I need to be. The Lord showed him that place at the Oak of Moreh in verse 7. By the way, Moreh means early rain or the instruction or teaching. That's what it means. And in Joel chapter 2, you hear about the latter rain. And, you know, you need the early rain in order to grow crops. We have to have rain here in the spring. Theirs would be in the fall. But you have to have rain in the spring so that the crops can germinate and get started. And you have to have that in order for things to happen. And Moreh means the place of teaching, the place of instruction, and or the early rain. And but then you need what Joel, the latter rain, because when we get to August, if you don't get enough rain, the beans don't fill out. If you don't get enough rain, the corn doesn't fill out. And so there's a place where you need both types of rain. But the early rain is where he was first parking. That's the place of teaching, instruction. And rain or water always means the grace of God being poured out. Abe just can't stand still for some reason in the will of God. So he moves on. He's 75 years old, so and he lives to be 175. So it could be a midlife crisis. I don't know for him. I mean, he's that kind of age if you really want to look at it. But I don't know what caused it, but he just can't stay still. And the average believer that I come across who gets confused with where they're at, a lot of times they say, you know, you're just not following the path that God gave you. And he has given it to you. He's talked to you, whether it was through a sermon or through scripture or an incident or an event. He's talked to you. But Abraham, he won't be still. So he journeyed on. There's a physical picture here of a spiritual reality. You know, when Moses was with the children of Israel standing on that cliff before the waters opened up, he said, "Stand still and behold the work of the Lord here." Because they couldn't do anything else. Bethel and Ai, the encounter with God. And in Joshua, we heard about the Ai because that's a place of ruin. They did when they in Bethel, Jacob parked himself there, and that's where he went to sleep, and he saw a vision of God, and he says, "Truly, God is in this place." Well, Ai is the place where Joshua and his crew decided they were going to take that city, but they didn't seek after God's guidance at that point in time, and they did run into ruin, literally, in terms of their conquering of the area. Because of presumption. Always ask God first. Ask God. You know, we get into all kinds of confusing things in life. And one of the things that I try to tell people, you need to go and talk to God about this. Don't knee-jerk react at it. Talk. The other thing that we do is we are presumptuous. We presume that we know the way, but we don't ask first. And that's what happened to Joshua in that bunch. Principle. I don't care how far you have walked as a child of God. I don't care how long it's been since you knew Jesus as your Savior and you were walking with him as Lord of your life. you are always a child of God. What I run into is what I call adolescent Christians. And adolescent Christians are like children who are in their teens. Boy, they're not going to listen to anything from their parents, and we decide we're not going to listen from God anymore because we've got it all figured out. And we just go on and start doing whatever. And then we get jerked up short because, oh, what's going on here? And it's the sin of presumption, which may be the worst sin out there, actually, in a lot of ways. We presume. And when we presume, we overstep our bounds. We take liberties when we shouldn't be. And we go beyond what is right on paper, and we just decide, well, I'm going to do this, and maybe God jerks us up short or not. But we are, a lot of times, if, I don't know, adolescent Christians, you've been walking with the Lord for a number of years, and you think you've got him figured out, and what he's going to do in terms of your life, and all these things happen. And you decide that you're going to figure it out and you're going to do it yourself. And if when you quit following what and listening to God, guess what? You get out in front of him. When you get out in front of him, that's when you get into trouble. When Jesus was on the road to Jericho and that guy was yelling at him, that blind guy said, "Hey, Jesus, hey." All the disciples ran in front of Jesus and they said, shut up. He doesn't have time to talk to you. And then Jesus put them in their place by saying, what do you want from me? And he basically said to the disciples, without saying it, you guys got out in front of me. And we do it on a regular basis. We think we know how God works in this world and how he's working in terms of our lives, and we don't pay attention to the fact that maybe we ought to just get behind him and move along. So I suggest to you that you pay attention and be very intentional in how you move with God. You follow Jesus, you don't lead him. You follow what God leads you to do, you don't lead God. He says, well, I know you want to do this, God. So, you know, God works in some very mysterious ways, and all you have to do is read the Bible to get an idea that, you know, God does some really weird stuff. I mean, it's stuff you don't expect. You know, I did a study and a sermon series on Gideon, and God tells him that he needs to thin his ranks because he's got too many men. He's got 20,000 men, and he's going to come up against 100,000 men or something like that. And he says, you got too many men. Thin them out. And he ends up getting down to 300 guys. Now, if I'm one of the 300, not to mention Gideon himself, I says, okay, we're going to beat 100,000 guys. Okay, well, I'm going to make out my will. Because, you know, that's one of those things where, hey, it doesn't look right. It doesn't work the way we think. Anyway, so it's where you say, well, whatever. Well, anyway, Abraham, he goes down to Egypt. Now, he will bring you back to repentance over a period of time in terms of that. And he's going down. He's blundering on in terms of his. He's not going where God has told him to go. He goes down to Egypt, which is like us going back into the world, and we're going to figure this out by world thinking, and I'm not going to stand here and starve to death and wait upon God to take care of me. That's what he's doing. And so he decides to move on because there's famine in the land. Physical picture, spiritual reality. Two words, hungers and fears. These are the things that drive us. Hungers and fear. If you look at the stock market, let me tell you what the two things that drives people, greed and fear. And we've had a bout of that in the stock market just recently. Greed and fear. Two things, they drive us. There was famine in the land. Now, that's, of course, that's physical famine. But those are the things that drive us. Why does he leave this place? Well, we're going to starve to death here. Never mind the fact that God told us to park it. And that he's going to give us all this land. He made a promise. He actually made a promise that I can buy into or at least listen to because he showed up and he told me. And I have people do this all the time. You know, God's worked in their life. And then they decide, well, I'm just not getting it done. I'm dying here. You know, and I've seen people do it in terms of job place, in terms of jobs they have. I've seen people do it in terms of relationships they have, marriages and stuff. I'm just dying here, and I have hungers, and I have hungers, and, you know, and you can be in famine, relationally, for that matter. Rather than, and you're in famine, and you're in the place that God really wants you to be, but it's, I'm starving here. I'm going to starve here. As I need to go back into the world and go back to where I was, where I can find some comfort in terms of whatever it is that the hunger is that's in you. And I realize that God is not there, and he's not going to be around that. I can go down to Egypt. That's what Abraham said. I can go down to Egypt. I can get a full stomach down there and a table in Egypt. I can deal with my hungers down there because there's famine in this place. I'm starving to death here, and we can starve in a lot of different ways. And Egypt is a picture of the world, and what we do is, and I've seen it happen time and time again, we think that we're not where we're supposed to be, or God's got some kind of, he just doesn't understand. And we go off, and we'll go back into the world in some form or fashion that speaks to us. Now, when he goes down to Egypt, nothing will lie to you more than your fears, by the way. He goes down there because they're hungry. Sarah, so he puts his wife on the line. Now, we're talking about the father of the faith here. Remember, he's all over the New Testament, and what a great guy he is and all this. But what does he do? Out of fear, he jeopardizes his wife and all that goes with it. I mean, you got to think about this. This is a man that is called by God. And because of fear, he gets stampeded into doing something. He says, listen, Sarah, I want you to be my sister so that they don't kill me. And so she gets compromised in the midst of the whole thing. Father of the faith now. This should give you some feeling of, well, maybe I'm not as bad as I thought I was. Hungers and fears. They're starving, but then there's fears. And those two things influence our decisions all the time. And if you don't get a hold of that and you don't understand that in terms of how God works with you, then you're going to end up in trouble. By the way, Abraham is not sinning here. He's just doing a dumb thing because of fears, because of hunger and fear. He's doing a dumb thing. This is not about sin here. This is about being stupid. In chapter 20, we'll look at that later, he actually does the very same thing with Sarai again when he goes down to Egypt. So in other words, one of the things that we should always take, you may conquer it one time, but guess what? You could very easily stumble right back in it and do it again. He does the same dumb thing again. In chapter 20, he puts his wife in jeopardy and compromises her, and it's out of fear then, too. And in chapter 26 of Genesis, his son Isaac does the very same thing to his wife. Like father, like son. You know, I think the sins of the father are passed upon to the children under the third and fourth generation. I think there's a certain, which comes first? Is it environment or is it genetics? I don't know, but they seem to do it. And in we see Isaac do the same dumb thing with his wife. So we can be prone to things. Just because you beat something once does not mean that you won't lose the second time. Or even if you've gone through it once and you came out of it and you said, well, what a good boy I am. It may be that you'll fall right back into that same thing because we are prone to things. Every one of us has our own weaknesses and strengths, and sometimes those weaknesses get a hold of it. And what drives them is hungers and fears. And that's the part. Verse 17 is the scary part of this whole thing. It's it. But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. Now, I want to say something about this. The scary part of this is Abraham is God's man. In fact, he's talked about being his friend later on. God called him. He ends up being the father of the faith, and we all talk about him. His influence as he goes down there, and he's really out of God's will at that point in time. At physical pictures. He's blundering on. He's bungling through this whole thing. He's doing stupid things with Sarai, and he ends up doing this. But because of who he is, if you're God's man or God's woman in this world, and you go off and you do dumb things, and you get yourself into other people's environments and stuff, I want you to notice something here. Because Abraham does this, it affects the people around him. It's not just that he's a covering for Sarai and the family. It affects the people that are around him. It affects Pharaoh, who is not a man of God. He's a man of the world. And Abraham comes down there, and because he is moved out of where he is supposed to be, there's affliction that occurs on Pharaoh. Now, you might say that might be his business. So Abraham's movement and influence and all that his relationship says about who he is with God actually works judgment on Pharaoh. That's scary. That's really scary. Because if you get out of line and you get out there and you're doing a really dumb things, it doesn't matter whether it's sin or not. It can be sin. But if you're just out there, it's going to hurt the other people around you, especially if you're God's man or God's woman. You hear me? It's important to hear this. Now, the other thing about this, the good part of this, even though there's affliction that is in the land where Pharaoh is, God covers Abraham. He takes care of it. He saves Sarah, and he alerts the person of the world, which is Pharaoh, that, hey, what are you doing here, Abraham? Now, two words that go with this, blessing and curse. Now, if you'll notice up here, in verse 3, it says, I will bless those who bless you, and him who curses you, I will curse. Blessing or curse? Well, I would say that at this point in time when he goes down to Egypt, I don't think Abraham's really a blessing. I think he's more like a curse. What do you think? I mean, he's causing everybody trouble because he decided to go back into the world, which is what Egypt is. Okay, Abraham is just blessing the socks off of Pharaoh, right? Right. It's kind of like Jonah. I did the sermon series on Jonah this fall. Jonah, he was running from God. He's a prophet who runs from God, and he's outside God's will. And that becomes judgment on the people in that boat. You remember that? God, they almost drowned out there because Jonah was on the boat. Was he a blessing or a curse? I don't think he was blessing the socks off all those people on that boat. You can be this way. Christians can be this way. We can be a curse, especially if God's trying to get our attention and get us back in line to be where we're supposed to be in terms of our journey in life, in terms of wherever he appoints us to be at whatever time. And you can get out of line and get off road, you might say, and you could end up being a curse to family, but also those around you, because God is going to come at you and say, we got to get this boy back in line. Now, the famine, that's a difficult place, basically. Anybody ever been in a crisis or a difficult place or situation that may be relational, maybe financial, maybe emotional, maybe mental, but you're in some kind of difficult place? Does that mean you are out of God's will? No, it doesn't. Difficulty is not proof that you are in or out of God's will. This is the dog whistle look. What? The difficulty is not proof that you are in or out of God's will. By the way, neither is prosperity. Doesn't say whether you are in or out of God's will. Well, what do I do? Well, this is all about the relationship with God. What was he told to do? He was told to go to Canaan. He was told to park there. What did he do? I said, well, I can't, I've got to take life in my own hands because I got hungers and things. And then he goes down back into the world, basically, and then the fears start eating on him, and he does some really dumb things, and he ends up causing everybody trouble. When people dry up around you, if you're the covering, you need to think about this. Are you a blessing to the nations, to the people, or not? That's the sign. Now, if you think about this story, Pharaoh gets the short end of the stick here because Abraham is fooling with his wife's name and honor. And Pharaoh gets hammered because of that. It doesn't seem fair, does it? I mean, you know, why does Pharaoh have to suffer because Abraham's being stupid? Well, I know this. That when it comes to fairness in this life, there's some places, if you read Job chapter 38 and 39, it'll talk to you about a little bit about fairness. If you read Jeremiah chapter 18, verses 1 to 6, you're going to hear about fairness. But if you also talk about Jesus up on the cross, if you talk about fairness, why does he have to die for us? That ain't fair. It's not fair at all. Abraham is out of the will of God at this point in time, and he's muddling through and he's blundering through his life. And you notice that there's no evangelistic meetings down in Egypt, right? None of that took place. Two things here, hungers and fears. Watch them. They'll drive you. They'll drive you like a herd of cattle. You see, circumstances, situations, and all kinds of circumstances in all kinds of different ways can drive us where we don't need to be going. A couple of things that I think I'm going to get done here. When you're in circumstances that are not good or don't feel good or appear to be bad, never knee-jerk react. Never do that. Don't be ruled by fears. You just need to step back and put a little distance between you so you look at it real close before you do anything or make any kinds of move. Never take the land in terms of this kind of stuff and say, I don't need to be here, because you may need to be there, but right now it might be famine. It could be famine financially, relationally, all kinds of ways. The second thing is, when it comes to circumstances, besides don't react to it, is that you might miss God's timing of things. Because I've lived a long time, but I've been in the Christian faith a long time, and I've been in ministry a long time, I want you to understand that God's timing on things is so eternally significant, and we can miss God's timing because we take off and do whatever. What do you think? You know, when you're in a situation or circumstance, don't jump at it. Think about it. And secondly, say, what's God want me to be and to do in this relationship or in this circumstance or situation? Because I thought, if I remember right, God said, this is the place. And he hasn't really told me to move. I've just decided to do that. Because when you start doing that kind of stuff, you become a problem for other people. Because you're blundering on in terms of your life because you figured it out, or at least you think you figured it out, and you blunder on away. And Abraham becomes a problem to other people. In Genesis chapter 13, verses 1 to 4, what happens is, now listen to this. Abraham gets taken care of. I mean, he gets thrown out of Egypt by Pharaoh. He says, get out of here. So he went from Egypt, and he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him. Now, Abraham was very rich in cattle, silver, and gold. So he came out of the world, even though he had blundered down into it and everything else, he came out of there okay. In fact, he came out of there better than okay. Now, I don't know what Sarai thought of him, but that's later on. And he journeyed on from there, and he went back to where he was called to be in the first place, between Bethel and Ai, which is the place between the presence of God and the things that we can ruin with our own sinfulness. And he parks himself back there. He brings Abraham back to that place. Okay. In this thing, wherever you are, if things aren't right, be quiet. And don't run to Egypt. Don't run back to the world that you came out of. Third thing is, live at the altar. There's no altar down in Egypt. That's the world. There's no altar to God at all there. Don't move presumptuously, because God has already called him there. And the fourth thing that I want you to see in here, notice the preserving action of God. That's real important. He went out of Egypt a rich man. He was preserved. Egypt is a picture of the world. And then, again, spiritual coverings, he took everybody with him. In spite of his stupidity, he went out with a prophet. That's important. Willful disobedience is one thing, and stupid ignorance is another. And basically, this is not willful disobedience or rebellion. He was just stupid. He just did dumb things. And I have been around people for a long time, and I know myself, we can do dumb things. And that's good news. And I'll leave you with that as you muddle through your life. Let's pray. Lord, I ask that you would help us to take the model that Abraham is and the things that he went through and the way that he lived his life, in spite of the fact sometimes he just went off and did dumb things, that you took care of him and that you call us as your people. And when you put your name upon us and we have chosen to be your people, that you can also handle us in our dumb things and also our sins and all that goes with it. So I ask that we take this as good news and look back and look at you. In Jesus' name, amen.